Hello, Bearers. Bearabella here. The Honeycast is excited to present the recording of Bearapalooza 2024. We'll be releasing each panel as a separate episode over the coming week. This episode features a panel discussing Future of Crypto with Nick White from Celestia, Serene from Eigenlayer, and Primo from Layer Zero, moderated by Smokey the Bear. Enjoy!
Alrighty, guys, let's get a little bit more decorum for the last panel of the night. Put more politely, I would love if you guys shut up for a little while. We are here for the Future of Crypto panel. Can you guys hear me okay? Ish?
Yeah.
Okay, fuck yeah.
Pretty good for a bear.
I try, man. I'm more literate than I expected. Guys, we have some of my favorite people and heavyweights of the industry up on stage. We have my man Primo from Layer Zero. We have Nick White, the father of modularity. We have Shiram, just my favorite dude generally, and the king of free staking. I would love if you guys could start by just quickly introducing yourselves and your protocols in case anyone has been living under a rock, and then we can sort of dive into the spicy stuff.
Yeah, Brian, CEO, one of the co-founders of Layer Zero, Layer Zero's end-to-end cross-chain communication.
I'm Nick White, and I'm COO of Celestia Labs, and we built the first modular blockchain network. So it's a layer one that only does consensus and data availability. So it's custom designed for scaling and securing rollups and modular blockchains.
Hi, everybody. Shiram. I'm founder of Eigenlayer. Eigenlayer is a mechanism to allow anybody to use Ethereum's trust network to do other protocols.
Very cool, guys. Okay, so your reputations kind of precede yourselves a little bit, but you know, to found a massive protocol, you have to fundamentally see something wrong in the status quo, right? What was the unique insight for each of you guys that you saw as, you know, wrong in the world of blockchains that you decided to fix? And what was that aha moment for you?
So you hear? Yeah, for us, I mean, we had zero intention to actually build the protocol. We had just gotten done building something else, and BNB chain was kind of going crazy at the time. So we thought, what could you do with a like completely ephemeral layer where you just do a bunch of processing there and then move state back to Ethereum? Built a game as like a toy game for ourselves, and then realized you couldn't actually do anything without a central coordinator, like triggering events on both chains. But we knew bridges existed. So we're like, somebody solved this, looked at bridges, were pretty horrified by the state, started to build a bridge, like just focused on liquidity, and then realized you still had the same problem. And that was like, okay, like we actually need to solve the transport layer. And that was, you know, just became this research problem we worked on that that became Layer Zero.
For Celestia, what we saw that was kind of mistaken in the status quo was that every blockchain that had been built took for granted that you had to do all the functions of consensus, data availability, and execution together, coupled in one single protocol, and that actually you could distill and separate, decouple those functions, and by doing that, you would unlock new properties of flexibility and scalability and decentralization. And so that was what the sort of vision that we pursued was, one of modularity.
From our point of view, what happened was 4 years back, or maybe 5 years back, when I was looking at the blockchain space, my thesis was blockchain's main innovation, the main thing that crypto actually allows us to do is open innovation, which is allow anybody who's a nobody to actually come and build on top of a common substrate so they don't actually have to bring the trust network. So if you're, you know, an Anon, you can go and launch a new smart contract on top of an existing chain and still actually, you know, get users to come and use it because they're not trusting you. They're trusting the blockchain to actually underwrite the trust. But this did not hold true if you're building a new infra protocol, like a data availability layer or a bridge or any of these other things. You had to figure out how to create a decentralized trust network and a community to actually launch any protocol. So this actually significantly hampered like our own ability to contribute to the blockchain space because, you know, we were, you know, I was an academic at the University of Washington, and we wrote a lot of papers on how to build new consensus and scaling protocols, all this kind of stuff. And there was no place to go and deploy it. The only way you could do it is to start an Ethereum killer, which like is really difficult and also like, you know, a lot of lift. And it's totally opposed to the principle of permissionless innovation, which is what I was attracted to the most. So the question became, how do we bring permissionless innovation not only to smart contract app developers, but to anybody who wants to build arbitrary distributed systems? So that is what gave rise to EigenLayer. Eigen in German for your own. EigenLayer is your own layer. You can come and do whatever you want on top of it.
Love it. It makes a lot of sense across the board. So, you know, another thing that we think about when it comes to the future of the space, right, is we talk a lot about the next million, the next billion users. It's become a little bit of a meme more than anything else, right, is in terms of a buzzword of sorts. But how do you guys think about how each of your protocols contribute towards actually helping bring that next group of people into the space?
Yeah, I mean, from my side, I've been here for a long time. First touched 13 years ago, really basically full-time for 11 years. I've kind of watched the evolution of a lot of things that happen. And I always had this thesis of what would happen, but I also think it's like a little bit tricky to get lost in the weeds. Like the thing that we focus on as we're building is we really just try to focus on what do we think the end state of the world is going to look like, and how can we build the lowest level possible primitive with like the highest utility, right? Like the maximum utility. So like that is the lens that we think about most things through. The thesis for us early on was that everybody was using these external bridges. There's all these issues with Raft. Like there's a bunch of issues with how assets were treated historically, and that everything was user-driven and not application-driven. And it was just very clear to me that long-term, like no user is going to have to go to a third-party bridge and do this thing and then go to an application and then go to another application. Every app wants to own the end-to-end flow. And as that develops, like what you need is the ability to just abstract away like all of that underlying plumbing for the application layer. And so like for us, that is really the goal, is as seamless as humanly possible for like the app-to-app layer across chains.
For Celestia, one of the primary things that we bring to the table for enabling mass adoption of crypto is just scalability and decreasing the cost to use blockchains. So by focusing only on data availability and by implementing a new primitive called data availability sampling, Celestia has the property that it can scale its block size while still being verifiable. So it has this property basically of having very, very abundant block space. And that means that the end cost when a user sends a transaction can remain low, even as more and more users join the network. I would say another thing that's sort of a USP value add from the modular ecosystem to mass adoption is just the fact that it makes it very easy for you to launch your own rollup with custom execution, custom, all different kinds of components. And I think the more it enables us new experimentation of ways to build applications. And I think similar to how Ethereum unlocked experimentation at the smart contract layer, we unlock innovation at the execution layer. And I think that will unlock another wave of innovation and experimentation.
From our viewpoint, the main thing that is that we are trying to do is to ensure that all kinds of infrastructure services can be built in a flexible and composable manner. And once you have the infra layer problems abstracted out, then developers can start consuming some of these infrastructure services. I think a good example, a historical example, comes from the cloud. If you are in 1995 and developing a web application, you have to build your own server stack. You have to build your own identity. You have to build your own payments. You have to build your own database. And on top of which, you're actually building the real app that you're actually building. In 2024, that's absolutely not how you would build a web application. You'd go to AWS. You'd go to OAuth for authorization. You would go to Stripe for payments. You'd go to MongoDB for database. Only build the little bit of new things that you want. Cloud already ushered in open innovation to a certain extent. Except that when these components interact with each other, they don't have rigid, verifiable guarantees. They don't have anti-rent-seeking protection. They don't have governance protection for the users. All of these things can be added on when we move from cloud to crypto. And our goal at EigenLayer is to enable this next generation of services. We call them actively validated services. Actively validated services are the equivalent of software as a service in the cloud ecosystem, like the MongoDB, like the OAuth, like Stripe. these services focus narrowly on certain pain points in the infrastructure layer and then solve it. And what happens is application developers who are building end user application programs, they concatenate these services, these AVSs, to create an end user application. And the dividing line between cloud and crypto is decentralized trust. But by having a common source of decentralized trust across all these AVSs, we're able to offer rigid guarantees that these AVSs have strong, immutable, composable access to the users.
Makes sense. And there's a little bit of a corollary to that, right? As you guys think about the protocols that you're building and how we actually get to mass adoption, if you will, at you know, the humanity level, right? How do you not have people look at you when you mention Bitcoin and think you're kind of weird? What do you think are the, you know, two or three major things that need to change at a societal level, whether that be regulatory, whether that be, you know, economic costs, everything in between, for us to actually have a future where crypto proliferates beyond, you know, the 2.5 or 2 and whatever trillion that it is right now?
It's a pretty interesting question. I use a couple of things. I think there's events that either go both ways, right? I think the positive case is that there is, like, as systems get better, and it's just a better form of doing something, like, naturally the world will gravitate towards that. And you can say whether that's Bitcoin now or whether that's stable coins and emerging markets or all of these things, right? There's just, like, eventually you get to a point where friction becomes so low and you've displaced all of this sort of, like, intermediary cost that it's just a better system. And naturally where there's sort of money or value to be made, a lot of things will, like, coalesce to that. And the other side is why a lot of us, like, got into this space originally, is sort of the self-sovereignty piece. Things like SVB starting a cascade and things blow up. It's nation state currencies, whether it's LATAM, whether it's Africa, whether it's all of these, saying, like, there is this flight towards some alternative asset as, like, an escape, right? And I think both of those things are really strong drivers. I think they both are, like, very strong fundamental human emotions. So I think, like, the likely case is almost an inevitability if the system is good enough. But I think the goal is, like, create a system that makes it an inevitability versus hope you get the beneficial regulation or hope you make a consumer app that's, like, so sexy. I think there are killer use cases, but I think at the underlying, it is just you want to make the end state undeniable.
From our viewpoint, I think it is going to take several years before we actually solve a lot of these pieces to scale to mass adoption. Of course, there is the UX problem. How do I download and run this wallet? Can we abstract all of that out? You know, just like Brian was saying earlier, you know, users should not have to face a lot of these things. Users should just get the properties that we promised them that they will get. But one of the things I think as the space we should start thinking and promoting more is we talk a lot about censorship resistance as a principle, but we think about censorship resistance as a fundamental property for users. And it is, but it is even more of a fundamental property for developers. What do I mean by that? The biggest censorship happening today is the censorship of developers by platforms. What do I mean by that? Imagine you go to your Fidelity app and, you know, you have all your list of stocks and other stuff that you own. That website tells you precisely the set of actions that you can take with your assets on that website. Now, I'm a developer. I have an idea of what else you can do with these assets. I have no place in the system to actually go and create something on top of this existing framework. So I have to seek permission. I have to seek permission from Fidelity, and Fidelity will give me permission if it is in their self-interest at that moment to do so. And so what this does is restrict the rate of innovation where there is a willing consumer who wants to consume the service and a willing producer who's actually able to produce that innovation. The match is not made. There is a lot of trapped energy in this broader digital platform ecosystem. And what we're here to transform is the ability for an innovator to come in and permissionlessly provide that service to the consumers that want it. This requires the users to have sovereignty over their assets, but even more important, it requires permissionless access for the developers to build on top of each other. And so that's what we focus on a lot.
I think there's still a lot of work to be done at the infrastructure layer, but we talk about that all the time, so it's not that interesting. And I think that a lot of the problems are kind of, the solutions are known, and now it's just a matter of putting in the time to build these systems and optimize them and integrate them, make them work. But I think once the infrastructure is more or less mature, we still have a lot of problems to solve when it comes to like onboarding and sort of the user experience aspect. Especially one of the issues of modular blockchains is that they do increase the complexity and fragmentation of like applications. And so what we need are, we need things that abstract away all the complexity from the user. We need also need things like embedded wallets where you can just join an app and immediately have a wallet that you don't have to download something separate and like sign up and like manage your keys and things like that. So I think there's like on we've really focused a lot on the base layer, and now it's time to also focus a little bit more on the top layer that's like more user facing.
Yeah, makes complete sense. I think there's still a lot of people that have no idea what MetaMask is or how it works. So, you know, there's steps to be taken in that right direction. So I guess on a different note, right, guys, to think about saying some of the quiet part out loud, right? When you talk to friends who aren't in the space, I think one of the most common questions I've gotten is, what can I do on-chain that I can't just do in, you know, the meat space, the real world, if you will, in an off-chain environment, right? And we talk a lot about the infrastructure layer. We talk about building better infrastructure. But when you guys think about an example of an application that has actually found product market fit and is sort of like only possible on chain, what comes to mind? What do you think is that killer use case beyond perhaps ownership? Is it composability? Is it interoperability? Like, what makes crypto win?
To me, it's obvious. It's just verifiability. Like, what Web3 is about is the fact that whatever you do on chain is provable, and it's provable that it's following the rules that everyone has agreed to. That's how we can be sure that there will only be ever 21 million Bitcoin, right? That's how we're sure that when I sent you money, that I actually did send you the money. I'm not lying to you. So it's all about verifiability at the end of the day. So we have to think about what are the unique things that verifiability enables. And to me, it enables you to do much more sensitive things over the internet with people who you don't know or trust. And it also allows you to eliminate corruption and sort of like centralized points of control that can be abused against users or like individuals. And because like in theory, we all operate under these like complex social contracts, whether it's governments or corporations or like business relationships. But those social contracts are still very fuzzy and flexible because they're just sort of like written and spoken. But when you can put them into computer code and have them enforced by computers and by individuals running those computers, that's the unlock, the verifiability and the social scalability that blockchains bring.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of obvious examples. I'm living in Canada right now. I tried to send a wire the other day with Wells Fargo. They told me there was two options. I could fly to the States and go to a branch, or I could mail a letter to North Dakota, wait 2 weeks, call them in North Dakota. They wouldn't tell me if they got the letter or not, but call them and have them check if they got the letter, and then they would possibly do the wire for me. So the delta between that and just being able to send your money, again, like self-sovereignty, all of this, like it's just such a massive difference for anybody who spends significant time here and then goes back and uses our current system for anything.
I want to say two things. One is a conceptual thing. When you look at technology, like when you look at democracy, why do we have democracy? The principle of democracy is that the governed should govern. That's the principle of the democracy. But right now we are under technological systems. We are governed by technological systems that we have no ability to govern. Like I go to Facebook. Facebook unilaterally gives me an update to its privacy policy and says, if you don't like it, opt out. But that's not enough because, you know, we're all stuck in this network effect where like there's no way for me to unilaterally opt out and still be functional. So networks need to have this simple fundamental ability that the governed should govern. And this is a kind of fundamental shift that blockchains can bring that other systems simply don't have.
Love it. Makes sense, guys. Now, I think another thing that's important for the space to scale, right, is the bar for talent to increase. I think that when you have a new nascent industry, you get the best and the worst of people. You get the people who think this is so new and interesting and, you know, they want to be able to fix it and make it the best space possible. And you get the people who want to come in and grift and extract as much value as possible, right? I've had the pleasure of meeting each of your teams. I think they're each highly competent, amazing groups of individuals. How have you guys thought about building a killer team? And how do you think about raising the bar for talent in the space as a whole from Web2?
I think from our side, especially on the engineering front, we've really not... I think there's been a premium for people who want to move fast. You see a premium on people who are very extractive on trying to find somebody who has done it before, somebody who's done this. And it's really less about building the right system or building a long-term system and just about somebody who can do the things, whether you're launching X project or doing whatever. I think my two co-founders and I and one or two other people were like extremely native, had been in the space for a long time, but everybody else, we just want to find the best. For the distributed systems PhD from Carnegie Mellon versus people who have like published smart contracts. And I think what we've done is we've taken a bunch of people and indoctrinated them and created a group of zealots effectively who care very, very deeply about the thing that we're building and like the end result. And I think it's important. Like, I think when you're building anything, if you're going to build something that's disruptive and great, like you need to find principled people, like people who share the same vision and are aligned around like the principle. And again, for us, it wasn't people who are in this space, not people who are like very money motivated. It's like, this is the problem we're solving. Is this interesting to you? And are you equipped to solve that problem? And then find people who are competent. And I think if you can find the intersection of those two, like that's what we've tried to do. We've tried to keep the bar extremely high and find not the best available person in the space, but the best person in the world, really. In see if they align with sort of our vision of the future world. So for us, that's the approach we've taken.
I think for Celestia, we're fortunate. We kind of got to play on easy mode because the idea of modular blockchains is just such a massive nerd snipe. And so in a lot of ways, people just were attracted to the idea and the vision organically. Even myself, I discovered the project because I read the Lazy Ledger white paper. And I was just so blown away that I almost couldn't sleep for like 2 weeks. And I was like, wow, this solves every problem in blockchain infrastructure. And the more I learned, the more passionate I became. And so I think passion is something that we look for. And I think, and also, like, frankly, I met a lot of the team that we recruited. I found them on Twitter because they were tweeting about modular blockchains. Mm-hmm. And writing things that I could tell that they were really intelligent and passionate. And I think optimizing for that has ended up serving us very well because the people that are on the team are in it for the right reasons. And like, it's like meaningful. It's like their life purpose to build what we're building.
So one of our theses is innovation happens in close, tightly coordinated groups. So, you know, when we say open innovation, you know, each unit of innovation is actually coming from reasonably tightly coordinated groups. It doesn't mean like you can get lots of different people, each of them build like a couple of lines of code and then they all work together. It doesn't work like that. So how do you build a close coordinated team? So the first thing is, you know, we look for people who are in their zone of genius. We're not looking for all of the same type of people. So this was a big mistake I made when I tried to do the previous startup, you know, 4 years back when, you know, we were academic PhDs and we went looking for more and more PhDs of the same type. And so, you know, that project ended up going nowhere and we ended up writing 20 academic papers out of it. So this time when we started, we were very careful to construct the company in a way that different people in their zones of genius. We have the crypto native kid, like the 16-year-old from India who wrote contracts, you know, when he was 12. We have like our COO is a 55-year-old. He's basically built the largest mobile app store in the world, 1.5 billion downloads back in the day. Our general counsel, you know, used to be at the Commodities and Future Trading Commission as a COO. So we have people who have come from all different walks of life. We have the PhDs who got nerd sniped and joined us. So the core guiding principle is that how do you attract people who are in their zones of genius and create a cohesive culture around the team so that they all can work together. This is very difficult when you actually go this path where you're bringing in the best person for each of these traits. So the reason they all come together, you need to have a cohesive value. Like, what are we actually building for? And in our case, it is permissionless open innovation. So that's what drives us.
And great analysis all around, guys. So, you know, to ask you a bit more of a contradictory question, right? What category of the crypto spaces you see it today do you think is not part of its future? You know, do you think that it's AI that goes away? Do you think DeepIn? Do you think NFTs? Do you think Anons disappear? You know, like, what part of crypto do you think does not last?
Also a very interesting question. I don't know. I joke around a lot. I don't feel I have any real predictive ability. I've been here a very long time. I've touched a lot of things very early, from minting Gen Zero CryptoKitties to farming yams at like 300% APY, right? Like, I didn't see the NFT boom coming. I didn't see DeFi summer coming. I don't necessarily feel that I know what's going to be the thing that lasts and doesn't last. I feel like we have some strong theses on where we think the market misunderstands certain things and how they're applied and what they actually give you at the end result. So I think there's a lot of confusion around the essence of things, but in terms of what ends up long-term, I don't think I have any good predictions.
I don't think I have a particularly good thesis on this, but one of the things that we think about a lot is how do we connect the financial energy with the innovator's energy? So what I think will not last is where there is only financial energy without the energy of the innovator. Because those kinds of things are zero-sum games, where you're basically like the last guy holding the bag is the one who's left losing. So as long as we can see a pathway where but we do need the short-term financial energy, because that is what is funding the innovation. So we need to make sure that these two come together. And the heuristic to find out if any particular thing will not last is actually to examine what is the innovation that is actually going into it.
I think one thing that won't last, at least not, it won't, the idea that like a monolithic blockchain where every app lives on one global state machine, parallelize a single state machine, there are limits to that. And so you're going to start to need to spin up separate parallel execution layers to actually scale blockchains to the world. There's also the argument of sovereignty and customizability. You want to have control of your own thing. And there's also an economic element, which is all the best applications. Let's say you're Uniswap on Ethereum, or whatever the equivalent of Uniswap is on Solana, is it Orca or something like that? Those applications, by choosing to be smart contracts, are giving up an enormous amount of value and execution fees and MEV and all kinds of value to the base layer. And there's no reason they need to do that. Once they reach a certain level of scale and maturity, it makes all the sense in the world for them to migrate to their own chain, and they will capture so much more value and be able to deliver a better product. So even if these large generalized execution environments do persist, which they will, they will be more like the launch pads of sort of like people wanting to play around and experiment, but they won't be the end game for where like the best applications live.
Love it. And I very much agree. I think you might know a thing or two about that, Nick, in terms of, you know, the future of chains. So one last question for you guys and you know, hopefully some useful thoughts here for this very rowdy crowd. You know, you guys have each built some of the, you know, most successful objectively and just exciting companies in the space right now. Right. So two things. One, you know, what allows you to maintain that sort of killer instinct to this day and age, right, where you're already in a great position, I'd like to say. And what advice would you have for, you know, burgeoning new devs, you know, users, people who just want to get deeper in the space? Like, what's important for them to actually contribute to a healthy future for crypto?
Yeah, I think the best advice I can possibly give to anybody, especially anybody building something, is like, as somebody who's done it a couple of times now, like, it's just incredibly hard. It's miserable. It's pretty thankless sometimes. There's like, it's a lot, man. It's like really, really, really hard. If you don't have like, and you can think about this from a trader's mindset too. If you're copy trading somebody else and the thing goes down 20%, like, do you sell now? What do you do? If it goes up, do you sell? Like, you just have no conviction. You don't learn anything on the underlying. Like, for me, the biggest thing, everything I've ever done that has turned out well has been like really just an obsession. It's something that I couldn't stop thinking about. It wasn't that I was trying to achieve a certain outcome. It was just like, this is basically everything I've ever done that was interesting. I couldn't look away from the thing. And I think really like the best thing to do, especially in this space, is just like play with everything. It's like, see what you think sucks. See what you think is amazing. What are the big unlocks? And like, eventually you will have something that you have really, really high conviction on being important, being needed, and just like that obsession, that thing that you know, don't go out looking for like, I'm going to build a thing. Like, you will find that thing that you just like can't stop thinking about, exactly like you were talking about. And like, I think you need that, because even for us, like, objectively, everything went as well as it possibly could have gone. It was us three co-founders building for fun. And then we raised our round at 50, and then we immediately raised this crazy round at 1 billion, and then 3 billion is just like, everyone's just like, oh yeah, like easiest path ever. The whole space coalesced. There was like 6 different times where we like very easily could have just stopped and not built. Like, we almost quit so many times just because, again, it is like everything is painful along the way. It's so easy to quit if you don't have that conviction and like adjacent obsession. You will just find a way to quit too early. And I think like you need to be able to put yourself in the position where like really good things can go well, and just build the thing that like you really believe should exist in the world. So I would say wait, like play around a lot, experiment. And like, when you find the spark, just run after it for as long and as hard as you possibly can.
I would agree that it just really comes down to conviction. Like, if you believe in the space, you believe in crypto and the values of blockchains and decentralization, and it resonates with you on a really deep level, that's what you need. You need to find that. And if you don't have it, it's like riding, you know, a roller coaster or like a bucking horse or something. Like, if you're not willing to just like hold on until like death, basically, then you'll at some point just be like, you know, it'd be easier to let go and give up. And I've just seen that over and over again with people who join the space, and as soon as things get hard, they quit. And it's sad, because then a year later things turn around, and then they wish they hadn't quit. All of a sudden their conviction is all of a sudden back when everyone else is excited. So you have to find the excitement internally, not externally.
Great points all around. I'll just add one thing, which is, you know, if you're a developer and you're in this space, reach out to the community. The community in crypto is really strong, which means like you just go to Twitter, like, you know, Nick was saying, you know, how did he find these people? They were on Twitter. They were responding. They were talking about it. They were excited. They were curious. Do that, you know, like Brian was saying, play around with these softwares. You know, my PhD student, who had actually written a whole bunch of papers on how blockchain works, even built blockchains by that time, he hadn't really grokked what it actually, you know, can power till he first time played with Uniswap in our, you know, lab. And so this is the thing, like, you know, there is an academic or a kind of textbook view of it, but actually going and playing with it can make a lot of difference. Going and interacting with the community is much, much more friendly than you would expect and than I have seen in any other space outside. So please take advantage of that.
Wonderful. Guys, thank you so much, all of you, for sharing your experiences, your thoughts, your advice. Loved having you guys up here, and we're looking forward to closing out Bearapalooza in a couple minutes with Papa. Let's call it, boys.
Thank you, Smokey.
Beautiful. Okay, everybody, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you all for coming to Bearapalooza. The open bar, get on up here, Yogi. Get on up here. Hell yeah. The bar will be open until 10 p.m. The food will still be there at the back. Thank you all for coming. You know, you guys are the best community in crypto. Ooga booga, and furthermore, GN.
We're good to go.
And that's it for Bearpalooza 2024. Hope you enjoyed panels 1 through 6, hosted by the Honeycast, broadcasted by the Bear Chain Foundation for Bearpalooza. And of course, as always, guys, we really hope you enjoyed the video content and audio editing and audio engineering by Tez. If you guys enjoyed this type of content, definitely be sure to leave a like and comment down below, as well as leaving a rating on Spotify. It means the world to us bears. But with that being said, hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you for more. Ooga booga.